Here's Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst. What's up, MJ?
What's going on, boys, ladies? How's everyone doing?
Well, we're doing very well.
Hey, MJ.
We're just trying to console our producer here. Hedge kicked him in the pills earlier, and we're trying to make him feel better.
He made a derogatory comment about short men. Not realizing that Al was right beside me. He was bent over on a keyboard.
No, he wasn't. He was standing up.
Well, he was standing.
He was on a box.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah, he was actually taller than usual.
Yeah, you're a tall woman, though. You're 5'10",
this is a
right?
point. Yeah, this is a big deal for some guys, you know, their leg guys, butt guys, breast guys. I'm a height girl.
You're a height girl.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Thank you.
To each their own.
You're an anti-heightite.
That's right. Yeah.
We referenced you on the lunch today with Gord and with Gino. You guys were getting after it about contracts and Marner and Matthews. And, you know, I brought the Dubas angle into all this because Marner's agent, what's his name again?
Derek,
came out and told Pierre LeBrun that they don't have any interest in negotiating during the season. Marner wants to concentrate on the games at hand, and they're not going to negotiate during the season, which is fine. But that kind of appears to go against what Kyle Dubas would prefer. Yet, when we interviewed Dubas right after he got the gig, we asked him, what did you learn from Lou? And he said, I learned that if you have time, use it. Based on the Nylander circumstance, it kind of feels like Dubas has already evolved, and maybe he doesn't believe what Lou was telling him in the past. How do you feel about, you know, the timelines of all these contracts and where you see all this playing out?
Well, I think we can appreciate it from Kyle Dubas' standpoint, where the more information you have and the earlier you have it, the better off you're going to be. You can make more better educated decisions. If you're trying to allocate funds, if you're trying to bring in free agents, make trades, it'd be nice to know what your salary commitments will be going forward, including if you want to make moves, if you have to try to coerce Patrick Marleau to switching teams again, you'd like to know. So I get where he's coming from, but listen, it's good to want things, but you can't force guys to sign contracts, and I have no problem with Mitch Marner not making it easy for them. If he wants to hang in there, wait for Austin Matthews and say, listen, I'm going to put up 100 points, I'm going to lead the team in scoring, and I'll take my chances in the summer. I'm not worried about slowing down in the second half or any of that. I'll just try to maximize my dollars by waiting as long as I can. It makes sense for Mitch Marner. I mean, he could just, you referenced it just before the break, the Drysdale McDavid comparison. He doesn't want to come in $5 million, $4 million less than Austin Matthews. And Gord Miller today on Leafs Lunch, he talked about Connor McDavid's percentage of the cap compared to the cap now. If Matthews gets the same as McDavid got, that's 13.9 per year, which seems like a lot, but it's probably pretty fair given the arc that both these guys have had early on in their careers. If he's at 14, Mitch Marner is not going to say, I want 8. I want 8.5. He's going to want to be in, 8 digits at that point. So yeah. I get why he's waiting, and I would wait too if you had that kind of game and that kind of confidence.
Well, how does this affect the trade deadline, though? Where, you know, again, Dubas was talking to LeBron earlier this season and said he'd like to kind of have an idea of what these numbers are so that if he brings on a guy, it's not a rental, he wants to bring on some term. If you don't know what the numbers are going to be, how does it affect what the Leafs are going to do at the trade deadline?
Well, you got to be pretty good at forecasting what the numbers will end up at. Now, we saw how that played out for William Nylander, probably not exactly where they wanted it, but, you have to be pretty precise in projecting what these guys are going to end up at, and then make your decisions, and also then factor in whatever kind of flexibility you could have if it doesn't turn out the way you want. If you bring in a guy with term and dollars, and if it ends up being $25 million for Matthews and Marner, and that's a couple million more than you wanted, then you might have to trade people, Connor Brown, Kapanen, whoever it might be, to free up that money. But it just adds another element of the unknown into an already pretty volatile mix at the deadline, so it makes his job harder for sure.
With Mike Johnson, do you want to join the mob and throw some takes about Nylander onto the table here, or what?
Yeah, sure. I would like to tell everyone to take a breath.
Okay.
I get the stats aren't good, and he's paid to produce. I get that, and I'm not even saying he shouldn't get better or he can't get better. But if you look at the things that he does well, and you look at the reason why he has been successful in the past, he's doing a lot of those similar things now. He's still generating lots of scoring chances. His lines have been dominant or relative to his teammates, pretty good as far as the shot shares and the chances and all that stuff. He'll score. It will happen. Like Tyler Seguin, it'll happen, and it'll happen in bunches. He can get better, but he's not been nearly, in my opinion, as terrible as he's being portrayed to be, just because he hasn't scored for a while.
That sounds reasoned. I mean, I think I'm with you on that. I
told you, I'm giving him about five more games. It's very difficult. You missed training camp. Mike Babcock spoke to it. I'm giving him five more, and then it's going to be like, okay, how much time do you really need? You want the money in this town. You're not the hardest working guy in the world. So in that case, you better start putting the puck in the net.
But how many goals do you think that he is supposed to score? He's scored 20 goals a year the last 2 years.
Well, I think
you
give him a full season, Jennifer. So he's a 30-goal scorer.
But he's never done that.
Well,
like, this is the thing. Is he a 20-goal scorer who's in a slump right now? Everyone keeps waiting for him to be a 30-goal scorer, but he hasn't proven that he is that
guy. I think
you're
going on projections, though, right? You're thinking more increased ice time with Austin Matthews, possibly different situations where he's put in a position to score, and maybe he can become that. I was an 8-goal scorer, a 16-goal scorer, 19, and then 15, and then one year you score 41. So, and I was a centerman, and I don't think they were projecting me like they were in William Nylander.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you make a good point, though. It's not like he's been a prolific goal scorer specifically. He's been an offense generator, but not necessarily goals. And, you know, the first 5-6 games, oh, this is where I'm different. I don't even give him any more time as far as having missed the first couple months. That grace period is over to me. He's been here now, what, 5 weeks? Right? 5 weeks, 6 weeks? And that's plenty of time to catch up, get your body in shape, get your mind right, settle into the new routine and rhythms of the year. I just think he's in a rut. I mean, you know, Patrick Laine is in a rut. Tyler Seguin's in a rut. But they don't happen to start a year when it happens off a protracted contract negotiation, and it's right away, oh, you in your years where you scored 30 goals, 40 goals, you probably went times 12 games scoring one, and it felt like an eternity. But when you had so many on the front side of it and the back side of it, it all just averages out to make sense. He just unfortunately has had his at the front side of the year, so it looks particularly gruesome. And he has to deal with all the noise that he's hearing right now. But that's the price that you pay when you negotiate a contract in the manner he did. You play in Toronto. But I just don't think he's been as bad. I was reading some numbers. Since he started the team December 1st, whatever it was, he's got the second most individual chances generated, scoring chances. Like, he's not scoring at the rate he should, but it's not like he's not doing anything to create those chances. He just got to get a little confidence, got to get a few breaks, and then he'd have the four goals you'd expect at this point.
Don't you wish some of your coaches, Johnny, what's happened to you? Pulled you into their office and said, "Don't worry, Johnny, you're generating." I don't think you ever heard that, neither did I.
I got that from my mom, Jeff. That's what, yeah, Mike, worry about not scoring. Worry about when you don't get any chances. That's what my mom used to tell me all the time. I'm like, no, Mom, I'm worried about not scoring. It's been 9 games. I feel like a dog. And I think we've seen that. I mean, they take him off Austin Matthews' line, the place where he would probably produce offense the easiest, and that probably stings a little bit to him. But I also like the fact that he uses a stick a little bit, demotes him down the lineup, but then he gives him a carrot by splitting up the power play units and getting him on the power play with Austin Matthews, a place where they were, you know, decent at times last year, where he may be able to pick up some points, not on the second unit, but on the 1A, 1B, whatever you want to call them. So they're challenging him, and he knows it, and that's fine.
Well, now he's chasing Milan Lucic in the goals department.
Oh, boy.
Lucic pots one last night. And you would think the reaction was, it was as if it was his 500th career
Both
goal.
Both hands up in the air.
Think about this. His first goal came when?
In Europe. One. Game one.
In Europe. Game one.
He hasn't scored in Canada this year.
It's hard to feel sorry in any way for Milan Lucic. Like, he's not a sympathetic character. He's this big, bruising, well-paid dude. I feel bad. Like, I get a point where I'm cheering for him to score. Like, I don't want to see the misery that he's going through continue, because it feels like that's what it is for him right now.
I feel that way about the entire Edmonton Oilers team right now, MJ.
It's ugly.
Wow. Their bad
really
games
ugly.
Are real bad.
Yeah,
they're bad.
They're brutal. Like, yeah. They're McDavid and a bunch of, like, Drysdale,
Nuge.
Nuge and Hopkins.
And if
players.
I'm up top, if I'm an Oilers fan, I'm starting to worry about one thing. What if 97? How much longer is he going to put up with it? He's watching other guys talk about being in contention, this, that, the other. And they did make it to the conference finals one year, but how long is he going to put up with it? What if he just says, check, please?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the luxury they have is he's got, what, 7 more years on his contract. So,
oh, you're right. Nobody could take that on, but
oh, people could take it on.
To being there. No, every team in the league would find a way to make that work. But,
right.
You know, I wonder, I know you've been around superstars. You're a star yourself. What must he be thinking when he sees Juju Arcara and Zach Kassian, NHLers for sure, but not players that probably maximize the amazing skill of McDavid? I wonder if he just looks at the board and be like, yeah, I don't know. You know, yeah. Like, that's not exactly what I was hoping for.
That's a Tuesday night at a peeler joint.
It's not the A crowd. Well, you know what, though?
In the afternoon.
Tuesday afternoon.
With the free
buffet,
and it still isn't good.
I would be more disappointed if I was McDavid, if I could place myself in his shoes, that Hitchcock is using him as a prop. Like, I almost took that as a shot to the rest of the team, because the reports came out after Hitchcock, after the game in L.A., ripped into the team publicly.
They responded in Anaheim, and then they got crushed again in San Jose.
They did, but apparently he was even harsher to the team, to their faces, but challenged them for not sticking up for McDavid. And I kind of sense, you know, after the hit from behind by Lindholm, the elbow by Doughty, Carter got him, that was almost, okay, we're going to put two big boys out beside you because the rest of the team is too soft or won't respond.
So sweet. But no one will touch them, and they'll never score.
But they'll never score. Exactly. And that's my point. If I'm McDavid, I'm like, this guy, now I'm a prop to send a message to the rest of the team.
Yeah.
Which I'm not sure that's necessarily the right move, because Hitchcock, he's done it twice now. Last week, he made McDavid, Draisaitl, and Nugent Hopkins leave the ice and made the rest of the team continue the practice.
You want to talk about a big job, though? I said it last week on my hit with Edmonton Radio, and someone tweeted it. It's like, it is a mess at Edmonton, but let's say you were brought in to fix it. What would you do?
There
are so many holes to fill. Like, you're talking about goaltending. That decor has never been good enough. And you look about the supplemental scoring up front. You're talking about so much work to be done. Like, what kind of Shanahan plan would work in Edmonton to fix that? I don't even know. Get the best player in the world, and the rest is nonsense.
This is not a new problem, though. This has been going on for 5 years. Chiarelli's been dealing with this, and he still hasn't found...
Two years ago, they made it to the conference finals, and everyone thought that... And Craig brought up the best point. He's like, it's not like this has been the norm. This has been the...
That's the anomaly.
The success they had. Yeah. And then it's just right back to awfulness.
Yeah. I don't know what they do. I look at that team, and... they have some contracts you can't move. I mean, you think they probably have to buy out Milan Lucic. And they got to try to hit some. They got to hit in the draft. Yamamoto, guys like that, and Bouchard turn into players and try to fill from within. Because, you know, McDavid's turned Alex Chiesa onto like a 30-goal scorer. So, I mean, he can do a lot with, you know, decently talented guys, but they got no wingers. Oh, like, I'm thinking you might go back there and pot 25 playing with Draisaitl, because they don't have guys who can score on the wing that play on that team. I think they're fifth leading goal scorer from a forward position. Has 4 goals. We're halfway through the year. In a year where offense is exploding, you got Nuge, Draisaitl, McDavid, Chiesa, and then Jesse Puljujarvi's got 4, and that's fifth best on the team. Can't win. Can't win playing terrible like that, no matter how good McDavid is.
Well, and because of Edmonton, and there you can't turn your eyes away from them. I watch them all the time.
I
love watching McDavid. Like, partially, I love watching McDavid. That's a big part of it. But
and
I'm so
also the train wreck element.
I'm fascinated by them, and what they've done is they've put up a shield based on ineptitude and losing for Ottawa. Ottawa's dead last in the league. Like, all summer we talked about, they're going to hand over the first pick. It's going to be a train wreck. They're last place. And no one's really talking about it because everyone's focused on, you know, the Leafs are always loud. Montreal's competitive all of a sudden. And Edmonton's a gong show. But Ottawa's dead last. And I kind of sense that that's where they're going.
Pending UFAs?
Exactly.
Like, can you imagine sitting in a boardroom in Edmonton and somebody pipes up and goes, we should try to tank for the first overall pick? Can you imagine?
Well...
You've got to rebuild.
They won the lottery anyways. I know that much for sure.
They know how to do that. That is their comfort zone. All right, Johnny. Good talking to you, man.
All right, guys. Anytime.